This episode of Inspiration Point is brought to you by the Quests and Chaos Podcast Network and the generous patrons over on patreon.com/inspirationpoint. So we'd like to give a big shout out to
Garlic Bread, Eric, and Spike.
And at our Muse $20 level, we'd like to thank
Prostaskius, Leroy, Kate, Jeremy, Jenna, Jacob, Falangor, Cheryl, A Bad Idea, Red Dead Coquette, and Robert Hans.
Thank you for helping us bring a little inspiration out into the world. And now, on with the show.
Hello! Welcome to another episode of Inspiration Point. My name is Captain Adam. And as always, I'm joined by my co-captain, Ren Tiana. Hello!
Always a pleasure. How you doing today?
Well, I'm feeling really good. The sea's been good to me.
I can certainly tell.
Yeah, well, anyway, I'm here at my computer thingy doing a podcast with you.
You're at your captain's helm.
Yeah. It probably changed a little bit halfway through, but
they always do.
But anyway, I like playing characters. Playing characters is fun, and today I wanted to talk about playing characters. But before that, how was your week?
It's been a week. I worked a 2-day gig, and then on Tuesday evening, I started having stabbing abdominal pains, which was fantastic.
Oh, no.
Neuroviruses are fun. Avoid them if possible, kids. I got very lucky. I got a very, very mild case, but I'm still stuck in my house for the next few days, including through my birthday, which I'm very sad about.
Happy birthday.
Exactly. I'm probably going to order something in just to, and like watch Dimension 20 or something all day.
Might I recommend Fallout? Fallout was so amazing. I loved it.
I have been hearing nothing but good things about the Fallout series from everyone that I've talked to. Everyone whose opinion I trust was like, drop everything, watch this now.
Yeah, I recommend that. I also highly, highly recommend X-Men 97.
Mm.
Both of them have been tremendous.
Is that on Disney Plus?
Disney Plus for that one, yeah.
Okay, so I think I have access. Yeah. I have access to Disney Prime. Disney Prime. Boy, that would be a terrifying combination.
Disney Prime. You know it's coming, right?
That's obvious. Yeah, everything is owned by like one corporation at this point. But yeah. I have access to Disney Plus and I'm an Amazon Prime member, so I should be able to watch those.
It will eventually all be by and large, right?
Yeah.
The company from WALL-E.
I'm just waiting to see which one wins, if it's Amazon or Disney.
I don't think it's going to be Disney. Disney's been having a rough go of it.
That's true.
And they've even been like Bob Iger's like, hey, how do I get rid of this thing? You know?
I mean, he already retired once and then came back.
Yeah, you know, and I saw Deadpool 2 on Disney Plus, and I was like, oh, Disney does no longer believe in Disney, I see. You know, I love Deadpool, too. Don't get me
wrong. I love Deadpool.
I love it, too. But it's a little different than the rest of the catalog, right? So, anyway, I don't see that boding well. Whereas Amazon is its own economy.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, so I think that's the... We're going to the Amazon standard here pretty soon.
Damn.
Well, you know. Anyway,
not thinking about our inevitable crushing capitalistic decline. How was your week?
Yeah. Meanwhile, I'm drinking literal Starbucks, you know, like in my hand. Fallout is also definitely not about those things.
Fallout has been about those things since Fallout 1 back in, what was that, the 90s?
Yeah, Fallout has always had that vibe because, you know, it's backed by this idea of Vault Tech, a mega corporation that essentially privatized survival of the United States. And
Well, survival. It was certainly an interesting idea of that.
Well, you know, there's a difference between surviving and living, right? Well. You know, there's a small difference there. But, you know, we get a classic kind of fish out of water story in this way. And, you know, the story is mostly told from the perspective of a vault dweller. And so we're discovering the new world just as she is.
Yay!
And she is great. She also looks like my wife, which I love. And she's all like handy and mechanic, but also a little naive. And I'm like, honey, it's you. They literally made a show about you. And then she started watching it. She was like, oh, it's me.
But at least she took it in good humor and you weren't sleeping on the couch for a couple days after that.
Oh, no. You know what? I'm lucky because if she has a disagreement with me, she just goes and sleeps on the couch on her own, right? Like, I still get the bed, you know? She doesn't say anything at all. So it's like, okay, well.
Wow.
But that gives me a lot of time to dream up a very strong apology. And, you know, I've become quite adept at it. You might say I'm proficient in apologies.
Apology, so, you know, knowing how to make a good apology to, like, sit and reflect on what you've done wrong and understand it from the other person's perspective, that is a skill, and it is a hard one to acquire.
It is a hard one, and I think that the best way to get there is just to take your ego and then just kill it. Just murder it. Just murder your ego.
Stab it dead.
Until it is gone, right? So I hear mushrooms help with that. Anyway,
that's certainly one method.
That's one method. What really helped me is I played Persona 4, right? I think that there's a difference between people that have like completed Persona 4 and those that haven't, like, you know, because so many people are still denying their shadow. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, yeah, you still have like a strong ego because like you haven't accepted. Right.
Yeah.
You haven't faced yourself. You have not yet burned your dread.
That was mixing two of the games, but yes.
Well, face yourself, burn your dread. That's all Persona 4.
No, burn your dread is Persona 3.
Is it really?
It is.
Well, it still works.
It does. It absolutely does. Because, I mean, so much of... I'm playing through Persona 3 on my live stream at the moment. And I highly recommend... Tangent, but whatever. Persona 3 Reload, I highly, highly, highly recommend it. Even for people who have completely finished Persona 3 before. There are so many quality of life adjustments. And they've added so much interesting story to what's going on. Tartarus is actually interesting to go through now.
Okay, well, in that case, I'll play it over the summer. Like,
yeah, Tartarus is so hard to get right, but they've added so many interesting things that I started discovering as I'm going deeper and deeper, because Elizabeth is like, hey, there's these weird doors that are turning up. You should see what's behind them. And you learn more and more about what's going on, and you dive. You're simultaneously going higher in the tower and going deeper into the depths. It's very cool.
That is very interesting. That's really cool. And I really liked Persona 3. That was the first one I had played. It was recommended to me by Chris. And I got through it. And like my first impression of it was that, and this is wacky. This is a weird game, man. And like every single Persona game has like 2 hours of just getting through dialogue boxes.
Yeah.
And you're like, this is so boring. What the hell? You know, and it's like, stick with it. Stick mm-hmm. with it. Because the next thing you know, like you are just completely immersed.
And you're slinging personas at things and figuring out which ways. Yeah, it's great.
It's really wonderful. I loved all three of those games. I never played 2 or 1.
Yeah, I haven't played either of the 2s or 1. At some point, I want to find an emulator, but I want them to remake them. I want them to bring them up to date like they did with 3.
Well, why not, right? I would like to see more game remakes. You know, Final Fantasy VII had a very, very successful remake. I keep hearing rumors of Knights of the Old Republic getting a remake,
ooh,
which I would love to see. I love that game so much. You know, I would like to see a Dragon Age remake at some point, you know?
Honestly, so would I, if only just to get those graphics up to date, because dear gods.
Right, like, just don't change anything else. Literally just update the color palette from brown to something else.
All of the voice actors are still around and working. Get them back if you have to re-record lines.
Yeah, Claudia Black is still as sexy sounding as she has ever been. Probably
mm-hmm,
more so.
Mm-hmm. And right? I can't remember the voice actor who plays Alistair, but I know that I'm one degree of separation from him because he's a magician in his normal life. And one of my friends is a street magician who has worked with him before.
Is it like something Valentine, I want to say?
Probably. Hang on.
We're looking this up.
Now I have to look this up.
Yeah, no, that's bothering me. I remember the other thing I heard him in was
Steve
in...
Steve
Valentine, yeah. I wanted to say, like, Steve Bloom, and I was like, no, that's like Wolverine and Spike Spiegel. Like, no,
I didn't know he was Scottish. That's cool.
Of course he's Scottish, right?
He doesn't sound Scottish. although, in fairness, neither did David Tennant as the 10th Doctor, and he's very Scottish.
That guy can freaking voice act. Holy moly.
My God.
Holy moly. So good.
Yeah, the ability to shift between a bunch of different voices. It's one of those things where, like, I'll tell my players, I'm not Matt Mercer. I've got, like, 5 voices that I can do.
Well, that is a perfect segue. I didn't even have to set that up because, yeah, so well done.
You're welcome.
I wanted to use this idea that I found a list of dialogue prompts on Reddit, and then I turned it into a document and gave it to my students, and I had them each answer these dialogue prompts in the voice of their character, and they were talking about how much they enjoyed doing it. It also didn't take them very long to do it. Because once you kind of get in the head of your character, you know, the answers should naturally come to you. But I think that this is a really good exercise for role-playing game players, because it's a way to sort of prepare so that when you do improvise, it just comes more naturally, right?
Sure.
I don't want you to read from a script because it's going to slow down everything. But, like, if we practice with the script in the beginning, that improv just comes easier. So I wanted to have you present to us a character concept from either something that we make up now or something that you already have. And then I wanted to give you these dialogue prompts and have you answer in that character's voice. So one thing I want to talk about just before that
is
what makes a character's voice?
Sure. Because a lot of people hear that and they just assume, well, it's the character accent and, you know, that, like, everyone just assumes that it's more the accent than anything else. And, oh, can you do a bunch of different accents? And no, you can't. Well, I mean, you can, probably.
Yeah.
But that's not everything that a character voice is. Like, I know... when I was playing Massive Nyarlathotep, Othotep, Ezra, who is the GM, doesn't do a whole bunch of different voices, but he has a bunch of, like, different mannerisms and ways that we can tell who the character is. Like, anytime the Black Pharaoh showed up, he would lean back and put an arm over the back of the chair, and he would start speaking more languidly. That sort of the king who has all of the time in the world, and you are just pawns in his game. And it didn't really change his voice at all, except that he slowed down and drew everything out.
Okay, so cadence, tempo, how you sort of lilt, you might say, you know, just how you carry yourself. And it's interesting that you mentioned that he physically would do something different. And you see this a lot of times if you watch videos of voice actors doing their thing. And you yourself, of course, are a voice actor. I assume you, at times, catch yourself getting very physical.
Yes.
I see these guys, like, sweating in the booth, right? Like, you watch Mark Hamill.
Oh, my God. That man is doing just, like, full acrobatics in there.
That dude, yeah, I'm getting tired watching him, right? He is so good. And I think he's an absolute master at the craft.
He's incredible.
Just incredible. Obviously... Canon Joker, nothing else even close.
Truth.
So you know, that physicality can help incredibly well. You probably noticed when I was doing my intro, because we're on camera, I was moving my mouth over to the side, right? I was, you know, doing something like that to help.
That was actually a piece of advice that I got from listening to Yahtzee Croshaw, who narrates all of his own audiobooks, every character has their own facial expression. So, like, if you want to have the very high up chippies kind of voice, my eyebrows go up, the corners of my mouth turn up, like, my whole face changes shape because I'm doing the very high chippy kind of voice.
That's right. So, you may think to yourself, well, I can't do an accent. Well, it's like, that's fine. Accent's just one of the many trappings, right? But you can skip accent entirely. If you do something like that, I understand exactly what you're presenting to me, right? That's, you know, if you said that was like the friendly gnome in the village who's giving me advice, I'd be like, yes, absolutely. I 100% believe you.
Yeah.
If you said that was the half-orc barbarian, I'd be like, well, that's a really funny take, right?
Like, it's a very, like, it's like what you did yesterday with the snake, where we were all like, what is this voice? I love it, but what is this?
So I call that one my brother bear voice, or like Papa Bear. He's just, hey, hello, children. I'm here to present to you my wisdom. It's like friendly, it's kind of slow, but I also kind of jut my jaw forward and I pick up I soften my eyebrow look because I'm a very gentle and patient creature, right? Mm-hmm. That sort of thing. So all of this can help. Another thing that is very helpful is vocabulary choice.
Yes.
Okay. Saying a word like Riddle said last night, erudition. Not everyone's going to say erudition, right?
I have to look up some of the things that Riddle says. Like, I've got a pretty decent vocabulary, but what Chris brings in as Riddle, and it's very distinctive. Like, we can hear, he doesn't do like a huge voice shift. Like,
no.
He pitches his voice up a little bit, and there's a little bit more like refinement to Riddle's voice. But really, the easiest way to tell that Chris is in Riddle voice is his word choices as her.
Yeah, 100%. So, like, if we want to present a high intelligence score, let's say, you know, generally we want to include bigger words and probably more drawn-out sentences.
Mm-hmm.
A prime example of this is Gale from Baldur's Gate 3, who won't ever shut the hell up, and so I never pull him out of the rock anymore. Right?
Why use one word when 12 will do?
When 12 will do. Yeah, it's so true, you know. You know, he saw the ocular region. Your eye? You mean your eye? Right? Now, this is where, like, playing a character with 8 intelligence is fantastic, right? Because you're just like, I got a worm in my look hole.
I think one of the harder things sometimes can be playing a high charisma character. I naturally have a reasonable amount of charisma, but sometimes when I'm in the midst of playing a character, it can be hard to be like, right, what do I say to make this person charismatic to this person that they're talking to?
So the key to good charisma in a character is subtext, right?
A
smooth operator never says exactly what he means, right? Or what she means, or what they mean, right? They're always having a conversation that's on a different level than the obvious conversation.
It's on, right? Like 3 levels, depending.
So, like, if you see in movies, like, 2 people flirting with each other, it's never somebody that's going, your eyes are like pools of starlight, bliss with milk drop. Yeah, whatever nobody cares, right? Like, because he's just going, you pretty. Me want sex, right?
So
like
that's pretty.
You pretty. Like, we actually prefer it if the 8 intelligence guy's like, pretty, you know, like, that would be better.
At least it's not wasting our time at that point. It's like, okay, yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. I understand what you want.
So that could be really hard to summon up. But I remember the first time I had Roland speak with Kelladry, you know, I had him play a little word game with her. And ask her, like, sort of like you tell me, I tell you kind of thing.
Yeah, the dice game.
Yeah, and
that was one of my absolute favorite moments, like, because that was where it really started for them with the with realizing that there was something there, was playing the dice game. Mm-hmm. And we had a tie, so it was I'll tell you about you and you tell me about me and we will see if we're right.
And that's a lot stronger than having Roland go up and go, "Hi, I'd like to get to know you," right? Like, okay. You know, this person is completely devoid of wit. you want to show off a little bit of wit, right?
Yeah.
You feign disinterest while also not seeming like you're trying to do a push-pull, right? You know what I mean?
You're playing the game. You got to play a little bit of the game.
You're playing the game, but you're also following the rules of the game,
making sure that the other person knows that there is a game.
Yeah, that they're in the game and that they get to play and that they get to win, right?
Yeah.
And it is like that's where like kind of that smoothness comes in. And the only real advice I can give there is watch romantic comedies, right? and there's almost always a contrast between undesirable guy who hits on the girl at the bar and then desirable guy that hits on the same girl right after.
Yeah, and usually like cuts in very smoothly, like, "Oh yeah, and you know, I saw this and this. How you doing? Is this guy bothering you?"
Yeah, this guy bothering you, that, you know, you're already winning. Yeah, they do this in Hitch really, really well, which I think is like the gold standard.
I watched that a long time ago, but I vaguely remember.
Yeah, literally the first guy that approaches the girl in the bar is like, "Your eyes are, you know," and she's like, "Okay, I said leave me alone, and what you heard was try harder, but that's not what I'm saying. I'm trying to be totally clear with you right now. Go away." And he basically is like, "You'll always be alone," and like leaves.
And the response to that is always, "Why do you say dying alone with cats like it's a bad thing?" Because, man, with some of the prospects out there, there are days when I'm like, "Yeah, I'll just have cats the rest of my life. That's cool. I'm fine with that." Compared to what's out there, yeah.
they are definitely better than some people, that's for sure.
It's true.
Yeah, because humans should know better, shouldn't they?
They really should.
You know? But anyway.
But here we are. So character voice is more, like, accent is a part of it, but it's also cadence. It's pitch, I think, is also part of it.
100%, yeah, pitch.
Because, like, you heard me pitch my voice way up. I can also go down a little bit and sink my voice deep into my chest if I want to do the more, like, soft, seductress kind of voice.
Oh, that's not bad. Maybe you should do that more often. That was pretty good, you know.
That is the voice that I use in lesbian romances for the love interest of the main character. That is almost always the voice that I use. That like deep throaty kind of voice.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. That's good.
I have a lot of fun with that one.
That is a weapon in your arsenal. Well done. Yeah, I dig that. So yeah, and then like we said, vocabulary choice is huge. The word ain't. Right. That is a word that is going to divide us. Right. You know, in terms of what I think of your character. So it's also fun to go against type a little bit as long as you're consistent with it. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be funny to see this prim and proper princess who's well educated and brought up use the word like ain't and y'all. Right. You know,
yeah,
because of just her corner of the world or whatever.
Well, it's also really fun to like establish something like this is a very prim and proper sort of person, and like you have an idea of who they are, and then in like a moment of high stress they just turn into the most foul mouth sailor swearing kind of person that you can imagine. And it's like, okay, I know a little bit more about you now.
Oh,
that juxtaposition is interesting.
There was a great SNL skit from back in the day when it, you know, this is how old it was. Phil Hartman was playing Ronald Reagan.
Oh, wow.
And his voice to the press was like his like soft, like next door neighbor voice. And then as soon as the door would close, he went to like full gangster mode. you know, with his, like, the people closest to him. He's, like, insulting people. And he's being, like, super mean and vicious and cannot, like, Machiavellian, right?
That sounds correct.
That was super funny. I like that. Phil Hartman, one of the greats. Cocaine, bad. Okay. So, before we do the exercise, tell us a little bit about who you will be portraying today.
I'm thinking, because I have not had a lot of brain power the last week, I think I might settle into a comfortable old familiar and pull up Caladry again, because it's been a minute since I've been in her headspace.
All right, in that case, I will...
Are you going to be annoyed that I bring her back?
not at all. No, I said, but in that case, when I give you the prompts, perhaps I'll do it in Roland's voice.
Yeah!
Or maybe I'll just jump between the different characters. That could be fun.
I want to hear your version of Revna.
Yeah, Revna and Croc.
Yeah.
Croc will be easy, right? That part's
Croc's
great.
Very easy, but Revna's a fun voice.
Yes, yeah. And Jaxton.
Yeah. So Caladry's, like, basic personality, first class, she's a Twilight Domain cleric. She is a half-elf. She's in her early 20s, which I think always surprises people when they realize that. Like every one of my characters, she is a short redhead. Well, almost every one of my characters. Hakoi's a tall redhead. And she's very much on the neutral good spectrum of things, where she understands that sometimes you have to do the down and dirty things in order to get things done, but she's very against injustice, which is not necessarily the same as, like, not breaking laws. She's fine with breaking laws if the laws are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But she's very much on the... this is wrong, and I will fight you with every step of my being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, how would you describe her sort of, like, education level?
She was raised in an orphanage from the age of 9 onwards because things happened to her parents, as you know.
Yeah.
Every adventurer has something happen to their parents. She was raised in an orphanage that belonged to the Church of the Far Wanderer. So her education level was pretty okay. Like, I wouldn't put her on the level of, like, nobility training, but, you know, she could read and write and had read a lot of interesting texts. Her religious training was, like, mostly focused on the Far Wanderer, but she had an idea of what the world was like and how to function in it.
Do you recall what her intelligence, wisdom, and charisma were?
By the end of it, her wisdom was at 20. I don't remember what to start.
Cleric, so.
Cleric. Her charisma was pretty high, too, though. I believe she started at, like, a 16 and was up at an 18 by the end of it.
Yeah, it was a spike game, so it was, you know, very, very bloated stats.
Yeah, I think her lowest was intelligence, and I think that might have been, like, a 14.
What an idiot. 14? Holy crap, no.
You know, compared to the wizards, you know.
Right, that's true, yeah. When everybody...
Yeah, I mean, she was, I mean, very much a spike game character, yeah. Where she was good at a lot of things, good at most things even, just in situations that kept taking power away.
Yeah, in that game, like, the low average is like 12 to 14, right?
Yeah.
Like, that would be like a normal person, right? So 18 was like... Okay, you're very good at something.
Yeah.
Okay, so having said all of that, let's start the dialogue prompts, and let's have you just answer in Caladry's voice if you can.
All right, let's do this.
Okay. Now, do you have to, like, say a keyword or anything? Sometimes with certain voices, I have to, like, say a keyword to get started.
Well, with Caladry, she's more of my, like, basic British English kind of voice. She's a little bit more mid-range. She gets, like, kind of high and spiky when she's upset about something, but otherwise it's more like this kind of accent.
Very good. All right, well, let's get started. And I'm just going to go down the list.
Let's do it.
Here we go. I told you not to touch that.
I'm quite certain that you did, but I needed to in order to see what exactly was going on here.
Okay. You can't come back here again.
Look, I understand, and I'm terribly sorry about what Croc just did. but I hope that we can maybe talk this out. I'm sure that we can help you in your situation.
I have never heard a bigger lie.
Well, I'm just trying to imagine Krog.
I think that's perfect right there. Well,
I'm just trying to imagine Krog calling anyone out on a lie, and the image is just so funny to me. Funnily enough, Caladry was never a very good liar. Like, her charisma was really high. And I think that she got away with lying now and again because people just expected her not to.
Yeah.
But, like, she never liked lying.
So, you know, that could be a way to respond. If you're playing a character who does not lie, like, that is perfectly, you know, you might have to, in that line, you know, defend, I promise you, I would never lie. Mm. So, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
Where it's almost just more of a statement about yourself. So let's move on.
All right.
Where did you find it?
Well, we were in the cave with all the Yonti, and it's a little bit buried in the back corner over there, but we were able to locate it, and I'm terribly sorry that we weren't able to actually retrieve your daughter as well, but we did our very best, and I'm very sorry.
Ooh, I like that sorry. That was
sorry. I hang out around Canadians, so sorry is definitely in my vocabulary.
Speaking of which, I'm sorry. I just don't think this will work out.
I think that you are right, but I have enjoyed the time that we've had, at least.
That's beautiful. I love that. Okay. I fear you were right. Let's see.
I mean, sometimes that's just correct.
I thought I'd never see you again.
Oh, gosh, that actually hit me.
Do you need a minute? Do you need a second?
No, I'm fine.
See, still got it. Still got it.
You did it in Roland's voice. That's cheating.
20 charisma, baby. Easy dubs.
Well, yes, once you've established the character of the relationship, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I wouldn't ever see you again either, and thank you. I'm just I don't have the words, but I'm glad and I'm sorry. I'm
That's great. That's great. Good stuff. Good stuff. All right. So,
because I mean, what you have to understand is that
what you gotta let's hear me out.
My dear listeners, Adam and I have been playing Caladry and Roland off of each other for the better part of a year before I ever met him in person. I didn't know what he looked like. We weren't on video calls, so everything that I had to work off was voice. So I'm very accustomed to letting that particular voice and tonality hit me, and it's like, okay, it's been over a year since all of that.
It's just an old friend come to visit.
It really is. It's that's the power of voice, of character voice, that if you can nail it, man.
Yeah, and just to help out a little bit more, Roland sounds the opposite of what I look like.
A little bit, yeah. Like,
yeah, I'm a big fuzzy bear, and Roland is Alistair from Dragon Age, right?
Basically.
All right, let's go to the next one.
All right.
I think of something fun. We need to talk.
Right. Do you prefer to do it in public or in private? And should I plan to have a second with me?
All right. Very good. Very good. All right. I like that. Like, okay, well, let me get prepared. Let me get my armor on real quick.
Very much right. Is this the kind of talk where we're going to come to blows afterwards? Or are we, what's going on here? God, I hate the phrase, we need to talk. I have such high anxiety that every time I hear that, I'm like running through catastrophic all of the possibilities of what's wrong.
Oh, man. All right. Let's see. I don't know how to tell you this, but,
well, just spit it out, whatever it is.
I'm not sure I can do this.
It's all right. This is a really hard situation, and it's really hard for all of us, but I believe in you. I know that you can do this. I'm right there next to you, all right?
That was great. That was right out of the game.
How many times has Kelladry said that?
Yeah. And what proportion of it was just for Jaxton?
Easily 3/4 of it.
All right. Let's see. Try to think of another voice you would know. All right. I am so sick of pretending like everything is okay.
Then stop pretending and let me see you for as you truly are.
All right. Apologize. Right now.
Apologize. For standing up for those who couldn't stand up for themselves. Never. Not in 100,000 years.
Good. Oi! Watch where you're going!
Sorry.
Just sorry.
I can see that happen as you're like running through the streets of, and like bumping into someone like, sorry.
That's fantastic. Don't do that.
Oh, sorry. Is that, right, it's bubbling. I probably shouldn't have touched that, right?
Well, don't just stand there. Do something.
Right, that rope over there? Yes. Hang on.
So, that's what you are.
That's what I am. What are you going to do about it?
Ooh, I like the little challenge coming back the other way. All right, well, that's it. That's the whole list. How'd you enjoy that?
It's really good getting to like go back into a character voice or to create, because I've talked about this before. One of the ways that I create characters, I don't tend to know a lot about them going in. So like when I imagine creating a character, I use the crate method, where like I see in my head like a packing crate. And on the side of it is like a brief description. So I know like race and class and age and approximate description and maybe one or two key words. But I don't really know much about them beyond that until they get into the game and get into the story. Like with both Andraste and Kelladry, like one of the key words was very much, and I hate to use the TERF's terminology, but it's the most apt, is Hufflepuff. Very much that idea of there is no such thing as acceptable losses, and I will knock your teeth down your throat for even suggesting it.
Mm. Yeah, you could be the loss if you'd like to be.
Are you going to stop me? I will go through you if I have to.
Oh, that just huffles my puffles.
But I don't tend to know much about them until I get into the actual game and the end. They encounter situations that challenge who they are. So I think this kind of exercise would be super helpful to get a jump start on that. So I have a better idea of who they are before I'm in the game, just so that I have a sense of, you know, where are they coming from and what kinds of responses are they likely to have to those kinds of challenges.
Yeah. And, you know, when you bring that up, the idea that, you know, who you start with is probably not who you're going to end with.
Yeah.
You know, I started this out with first Roland, like when you first met Roland, and he was much more of like a comedy character.
Much more of the King George, very nasally sort of fellow.
Yeah, the Queen's accent when it came to... I was watching The Crown at the time, right? And Hamilton had come out like not super long before that. And there was that song, "You'll Be Back Soon, You'll See," right?
You'll remember you belong to me.
That's right. That's the one. And so that was the accent I was the most interested in doing. But eventually it became more of that other one that I used that kind of hit you, that was the more sincere, somewhere between Alistair in Dragon Age 1 and Cullen from Dragon Age 3, you know, just, you know, somewhere in there. And why does that change? It's like, well, because you go through the game and things happen to your character and you kind of get to know the tone of the universe of the game itself, and you mesh with other people, and things that are kind of fun and quirky over time can feel more annoying than they can be endearing, right? And so you just kind of can shift into something that's more of a comfortable and perhaps more accurate place.
Yeah, and also it's a very interesting thing to do character-wise, because when Roland and Caladre first met, Roland was very much like hiding behind his mask of the quirky upper-class soldier kind of character. Mm-hmm. And it didn't take long, really, for him to like soften down into, because I think it was the dice game where, like, I think it was the first time that she really heard the softer voice, where it was like, oh, no, there's someone interesting behind that mask.
Yes, it was like a very obvious mask. And, you know, like, you want characters to have a bit of an arc or a lot of an arc. And yeah, having them show the edges of the mask to the other players helps them know where to look, right? Helps them know where to pry and where to, you know, kind of put their fingernails if they want to get deeper. You know, the trouble sometimes you run into is when there's too many denials of the mask that it's there, you know, and players are trying to pretend to be perfect, or maybe they're completely unaware of their own character's mask, right? And then you're just like, well, how do I even engage with you? Because you don't even know what character you're playing.
Yeah. And right? That can be quite a challenge with that sort of thing. And it's hard. I mean, we were talking about Persona earlier, and I think that very much applies here as well. It's hard to know when that mask is just so much a part of you as the player. You're not necessarily aware that you are wearing a mask, even though, I mean, we all do. We all put up masks in different situations in society of, you know, this is who I am here as opposed to who I am here. And if you're aware of that, it's a very powerful tool, but also, you know, some self-awareness of, okay, these are all aspects of me, and when do I drop that? When do I let go of it?
Yeah, and sometimes it's even expected of you. I mean, the way I would behave at church had to be different than who I really was, and a lot of times that would push up against me. In my professional life as a teacher, I need to be a different person sometimes than I truly am, and there are times where I want to get real with the kids, but then It almost never pans out the way I want it to be. Because the truth is like, they don't want you. They want security, right? Yeah. They want that adult that they can rely on and they can believe in, right?
They want that idea.
They want the idea, right? And so if I make it more about me, then I actually create a rift between their ability to learn and what I have to teach.
Mm-hmm.
So, but... Yeah, in real life, you know, what we have to understand is that we have them, and that, and when we're putting them on, that we're aware of that is happening, right? But the worst thing we could do, and what we learned from Persona 4, is to deny that those things exist, to deny that the shadow lives there, right? I'll never reveal my shadow to my students, but like,
but you know what it is, you know where it hides, lurking behind your eyes.
Correct. And we have to know these things about our characters. Like, Roland had all these, you know, traumatic experiences from war, and he was presenting this very educated gentleman, you know, that was, you know, flippant. And while he cared about things, nothing would really get to him, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, because that would be really terrifying.
And for Caladre, she was much more open about things, but definitely had her secrets. But she also had a very quick temper that made things a little bit more challenging sometimes, because she would square up against God himself if she thought he was wrong.
Well, I hope she's ready to square up because.
the god of control is out to play. Oh, good.
Yeah, and Chris's character, Brandwyn, from our Storm Kings game, very much from the tribe of, you know, the strong survive and the weak perish. But later on, seeing her trade in the lone wolf and the survivor and the predator for the pack leader, right? For the nurturer that was always there, but the tribe had been pushing away, mm-hmm. right? Had been driving into the dirt, you know. And I love this about Baldur's Gate as well, is like everybody has so much baggage when they come to that table. You know, Astarion's whole demeanor, you know, is just nothing about it is genuine.
Astarion reminds me so much of Roland in the early days where he's just flippant and everything's funny, or and he doesn't take anything seriously, and it's just like, oh darling, really?
Yeah, that can't be that way, you know. But like,
but it's like there's so much deep hurt underneath.
Oh yeah, I mean Astarion's. I mean, they've all been horribly abused, but Astarion's the most.
Yeah.
Like, Astarion's the easily the most tortured of all of them. I mean, he's among the many torments that he experienced. I mean, he's buried alive for 100 years.
Jeez.
You know, which is just, like, what does that do to a person?
No wonder he's the internet's boyfriend. We're all broken in some way.
Right? And then you have, on the other side, you've got, like, Karlach.
Oh, I love Karlach.
She is like the palate cleanser of the group because more than anyone else, she's the one who is best dealt with her emotions because she's in touch with her anger.
Yeah, she's very much in touch with her anger. She's going to go right. And break everything with a big old axe where she's just like, la-da-da-da-da, screw you.
Yeah, she's like the most mentally healthy member of the entire party.
And isn't that terrifying?
Right. Like, she knows she's going to blow up and die, and she is totally at peace.
Yeah.
Her biggest worry is not living, it's being able to touch someone. Like, we can all learn a lot from Karlach.
Yeah, I'm still in my very first playthrough of the game, but I really just want to give her a big hug and be like, can I make, like, a tiefling with fire resistance so I can just hug her?
That's right. Yeah, you know, Will's got his problems. Manthara, Lazelle, and Shadowheart are all in essentially the same boat.
Yeah.
Just completely raised by abusive cults that have completely twisted their perception into something that just isn't even close to true or real, you know? And, you know, they all three of them have to learn compassion above mm-hmm. all else. And to set aside their pride. They have so much pride. And like that pride is such a mask to the vulnerability that is within. And you can absolutely play into that pride and you can help them stay that way.
Or
you can help them overcome those things and go through their character arcs and
become who they should actually be.
And helping them to not break out of that produces very sad times.
I believe it.
But, you know, sometimes it's fun to see what'll happen, right?
It's always fun to see what the what if is.
You know, Dark Shadowheart is so sad. it's so heartbreaking. It's real bad. And poor Lazelle, man. But, yeah, Manthara is the toughest nut to crack out of all of them. For good reason. The drow are rough.
Well, yeah. But one thing I do love, like, all the voice actors of that game are just absolutely incredible, and they bring so much of all of that. Like, I'm still in the first act. I still don't know most of what happens with these characters, but I know, you know? Because I can hear it. I can hear it in how they're all performing their characters. I can hear the layers of things. Especially, like, Neil is an absolute treasure. And how he voices Astarion, where it's like, I can hear the pain underneath the flippancy.
No, that, I mean, it really goes to his skill as a voice actor, is how he's able to portray what is said and what is not said.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
the subtext in his tone is just incredible.
Yeah, I mean, there's even skill checks you can make within his dialogue where the narrator's like, you can tell that he's lying, right?
Yeah.
You're like, no crap, narrator. I caught that on my own, right?
It's like, I didn't need an insight check for that one, ma'am.
My real life insight check was fine. Yeah, like you just assume that nothing Astarion says is true for most of the game.
Until it's
like the most heart-wrenching scene, the most amazing performance in the whole damn game. It all cultivates into one moment, and it is, the whole game is worth the price of admission just from there, you know, and how masterfully they pull it off. So, highly recommend finishing Baldur's Gate 3.
I do need to finish it. It's one of those things where it's like the only time that I really play video games these days is when I'm live streaming, and I don't want to start live streaming in the middle of my first run of Baldur's Gate 3. Either it's I've started from the beginning and we're doing it all scuff and all, or this is going to be my Kelladry run.
Right,
when
yeah.
When I download the Twilight Domain DLC.
DLC, oh yeah.
Patch, well. Whatever.
You might as well do an honor run for then because then
absolutely
just...
not.
Well, I mean, you're guaranteed to win, so you might as well.
Twilight Domain is powerful, but it definitely depends on what's around, because like even the most powerful character is subject to the action economy.
That's true, but that'll be a discussion for another time.
Indeed.
As far as today goes, I think that we've kind of hit it, and hopefully the people are a little bit more confident about doing voices. I mean, we've talked about voice before on the show, either with you or with Andrew, but, you know, it's something that is important to revisit. And, of course, you can come up with, like, so many dialogue prompts if you want to, but we get the idea from just those few lines who Kelladry really is. It's just this very compassionate but also very bullheaded person.
Yes, right? That's a good description. She's very much the kind of person who will beat her head against a brick wall until either her head or the wall dissolves. And I put good odds on her.
She has both a fist and an open hand, right? And,
it's true.
And that's an important part of her. But she will gladly open her hand to you, though convincing her that you deserve it might take a minute. Right?
It depends. Like she did offer grace to those that she had originally been upset with. But in any case, where it was like when we were in the Shadowfell in that domain of dread, it was like, nope, I don't care how good of a person you seem to be. You are allowing yourself to be used by this horrible thing, and I will stand against you and that representation until the end of time.
That's right. That's right. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think advice that I would give as a voice actor, actually, if you want to practice different voices, is spend time in the shower, just like practicing different voices, places where it's usually at least just you, unless your spouse is like staring at you through the glass wall, like we were talking about in game yesterday.
Just make eye contact and continue.
Yeah. Do you understand? These are the kinds of voices that I could pull.
It is me, your husband. You willingly chose to marry me.
I'm going to clip that part of the video because that is the funniest thing I've seen in a long time.
Of course, my wife would think it was cute and funny.
She would. But also, like, listen to different kinds of characters that you might like. If there's an anime character that you really like, practice just imitating them in the car, in the shower, whatever. If there's an accent that you particularly like, it's actually really interesting because you can tell who I've been watching a lot by my various cadences. and various word choices that I use, especially when I'm watching someone like Gordon Ramsay or the 10th Doctor. It is very easy to tell when I've been watching a lot of those shows.
The grand spectrum of voice acting.
Oh, man. And they're, you know, they're both dudes who are very animated. And that's another thing, too, where it's like,
move.
And that's one of the things that I love about like Matt Mercer is you watch him at the table. Even if you don't watch the rest of Critical Role, and I don't, just watch how he moves in different kinds of characters and the kinds of physicality that he puts in and, you know, imitate what you're comfortable with and push the bounds of that comfortability because I hate looking stupid. But if that's what it takes for a character, then I'm all in.
That's right. I think we're often much more self-conscious.
We really are.
About our performance than other people want. Like, I generally feel like people are really rooting for you to do the best you can.
Yeah.
If I'm sitting there and I'm watching a speaker, I want them to succeed because watching them fail is so cringy, right? Like, it hurts me. And, like, I'm like, please do well. Please do well. I want you to nail this. I want you to knock this out of the park.
Yeah, and that was something that I was told very early on in my theater career, that when you're doing a performance, the audience is already 90% in your pocket because they decided to get up, put on nicer clothes, drive to the theater, pay the ticket price, sit down in the theater. All you have to do is not lose them, but they are already rooting so hard for you to succeed that you have to kind of screw up really egregiously in order to lose them.
Yeah, I think that's an incredibly wonderful advice. Just so useful for theater, for public speaking, for anything, you know, although some public speaking might not be exactly the same because a lot of times it is obligatory. But if you're in any sort of non-obligatory moment, like, yeah, people are already on your team. Nobody wanted to pay a ticket to watch someone bomb unless they're just like cruel.
Yeah.
Right?
And what you think is outrageous and ridiculous is going to be interesting to people because no one wants to watch a still, quiet monotone. No one wants to listen to a still, quiet monotone. They want to hear you just like explode with energy. And like Adam can see on the video, I am like got really expressive when I did that. And yeah, I think you can hear it in my voice. I can see it in the WAV file. It got spiky.
It got spiky.
And that's a lot of fun. That's much more interesting to listen to than just the still, calm, quiet monotone of me just presenting information to you.
Or even trying to do that voice, but without animating your body.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you can do it, but you're not going to get as much out of it, right? Like, you want to stack all those little plus two bonuses, right?
Yeah.
In presenting your character.
Trying to do that kind of voice spiky excitement without doing it with your body is actually going to hurt your voice. I've done that before, and it pulls at things in your throat because you're trying to do it without moving, and your body rebels against that.
Yeah, for sure. So the more you can kind of give over to it, the better. One last thing I'll say is I also like to look at a picture of the character I'm portraying, which particularly helps me when I'm GMing and I might be jumping between voices.
Yeah.
But no matter what voice I'm doing, I'm usually staring at a picture. And that really helps me more than anything else. And then the last little piece of advice that I got from when we had Nathan on the show, who was like Andrew's mentor, was he would assign an animal to a character. And I love that piece of advice, you know. So like if I say, okay, this character is a rat, that already tells me a lot, right, about how they're going to sound and feel. If I say this character is a... Yeah, exactly. This character is a dog. This character is a cat. This character is a cow. This character is a bear, right? Like, that really just tells us a lot, right?
It does.
And so with one word, we can have a lot implied some. All right. We have delivered a lot of tips and tricks and things to put in your pocket. So the next time someone says, well, I'd like to do other voices, but I can't do accents. Maybe point them at this, you know, and say, actually, accent is just one of the many ingredients to character voice.
And honestly, I would argue, even though like accent tends to be the first thing that I pull on, it's also one of the least important because, you know, accent gives you a pretty good place to start. But I think that all the rest of it is what's going to really carry it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. Speaking of carrying it, why don't you carry us out of here?
Carry on, my wayward son.
Wow, good reference. Kansas.
Yeah, well, you know, I pull it from Supernatural because.
Oh, well, there you go.
I'm a nerd. What do you want?
Thank Not you. Not on all. This show.
What? Shocker. Shocking, I say. Thank you all so much for joining us for this week's episode of Inspiration Point. We hope that you have gotten some inspiration, some thoughts, some ideas of what to do with your next character, whether you're a player or a GM. Because I know for myself, when voicing NPCs, boy, voices are one of the hardest things to play around with. And having more of those things to draw on, more ideas, more, you know, more willingness to look like an idiot, or at least what I feel like when I feel like I'm looking like an idiot. I think that it's really important to let go of that self-consciousness and just be like, we're kids on a playground. We're kids playing make-believe with wooden swords and shields running around in the sand lot. So let go of the self-consciousness, have fun, and until we see you next time, stay inspired.
Farewell. Goodbye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Inspiration Point. If you'd like to support what we do, go and check out our Patreon at patreon.com/inspirationpoint. If you can't support us directly, that's okay. You can also help support us by telling people about the podcast. A little inspiration goes a long way.
Inspiration Point is edited and produced by Tiana Hansen and is distributed by Quest and Chaos. If you like what you hear with us, give Quest and Chaos YouTube or Twitch channels a visit. They play Dungeons & Dragons on a weekly basis and have a bunch of campaigns of Call of Cthulhu, D&D, and board game playthroughs archived on their YouTube.
Join us next week for more inspiration.